And today we're going to be talking about acts of folly, stupid things. Anyone here who constantly does stupid things? Don't point them out. We probably already know who they are. But anyway, sometimes we as human beings do stupid things, like falling over while attempting to kick a chair. That is pretty stupid. Now, some people might do stupid things because they're basically lacking in common sense. But for most of us, it's probably more a case of some temporary stupidity or because of a momentary lapse in concentration. At least I hope that's why we have these moments of silliness. Now, I remember one day back when I was in high school, there was a close friend of mine who came over to sleep at my place. And it just so happened that that morning, my grandma also came to visit. So my friend, let's call him Bill, wanted to introduce himself to my grandma. So Bill rocked over to my grandma and said, "Hello, I'm Steve." For some reason, he was introducing himself as me. It was probably a momentary slip of the tongue, but at that moment in time, my friend did come across as a bit of a goose, and it was rather embarrassing. It's something that I've never forgotten, and he probably hasn't either. Now, in today's passage, Solomon gives us advice concerning 10 different acts of folly that we need to avoid. He concentrates on 3, so we'll be concentrating on those 3, but we'll also be mentioning the 7 others that Solomon gives in a quick list at the end of this passage. Now, the first act of folly concerns going surety for others. Now, going surety or putting up security for others basically means that we promise to take on the debt of someone else if that person defaults on the debt in question. For example, if you want to buy a house but you don't have much of a deposit or don't have a high income, then sometimes the bank will only lend you money if there's someone else who will stand surety in case you can't pay back the loan. And a variation on surety is when someone puts up something as security against a loan. For example, sometimes parents put up their own possessions as security so that their children can get a loan from the bank. But according to the Bible, going surety for someone else isn't a good idea. Standing surety for someone else is putting yourself in a potential trap. If the other person defaults on their debt repayments, then you're stuck with it, like a gazelle caught by a hunter or like a bird caught in a trap. And Solomon's teaching here is consistent with what we see elsewhere in the Bible. In Proverbs 22, verses 26 and 27, in the sayings of the wise, it says, "Don't be someone who strikes hands in pledge or goes surety for debts. If you lack the means to pay, why should your very bed be snatched from under you?" From the biblical perspective, being in debt is generally a bad situation to be in. So why would you want to take on the debt of someone else? There's an old Assyrian proverb which says, "I've hauled sand, I've carried salt, but nothing is heavier than debt." Debt is something to avoid, if at all possible. And for those who have fallen into the trap of standing surety for someone else, Solomon tells us what we should do. And it's basically we should do whatever we can to get out of that situation. In verse 3, he actually says that we should go grovelling forcefully to whoever is concerned in order to negotiate our way out of such a situation. So going surety for someone else is a dumb idea. But how does this fit in with the biblical teaching about lending? In Luke 6, Jesus says, "If you lend to those from whom you expect repayment, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners, expecting to be repaid in full. But love your enemies, do good to them, and lend to them without expecting to get anything back." Now, when we read verses like that, we sort of think, is Jesus saying that whenever someone comes up to me and asks for a loan, do I have to give it to him or her? Is it wrong to ever refuse someone asking for a loan? And isn't this effectively the same as going surety for someone else? Well, we need to place Jesus' teaching here back into its historical setting, and in particular to understand the law of Moses regulated lending to the poor. The law of Moses taught that lending to people in genuine need is something that God's people should be willing to do. For example, in Deuteronomy 15, verses 7 to 10, it says, "If there's a poor person among your brothers in any of the towns of the land that the Lord your God is giving you, don't be hard-hearted or tight-fisted toward your poor brother. Rather, be open-handed and freely lend him whatever he needs. Give generously to him, and do so without a grudging heart. Then, because of this, the Lord your God will bless you in all your work and in everything you put your hand to." Well, we're to be generous in lending to the poor. That's what the law of Moses is saying. Being generous in lending without expecting repayment in the Bible is only applied to those who are in need, those who are genuinely poor. In other words, if it's potentially a matter of life and death, a matter of whether someone will have enough food to put on their table for their family to eat, then we should be more than willing to lend out our money in such circumstances. If, however, it's someone coming to you because of some business shortfall, or because the person in question is lacking money because of bad investments or because of a lack of discipline in spending, and it isn't a matter of genuine poverty, then we're under no obligation to lend that person anything. In fact, in such situations, we need to realise that God also wants us to use the resources he gives us wisely, and they shouldn't be wasted on people who can't manage money or used to feed bad habits in other people. People need to learn to manage money well and to avoid burdening others with their debts. But at the same time, there needs to be compassion and generosity towards those who are genuinely poor, towards those who are genuinely in need. So basically, I think what the Bible is saying, it's saying yes to charitable loans, but no to standing as surety. Don't take on the debts of others. It's a silly thing to do. Now, the second act of folly that Solomon identifies has to do with the problem of people sitting down on their backsides expecting others to provide for them. The second act of folly is the problem of laziness. In verses 6 to 8, Solomon says, "Go to the ant, O sluggard. Observe its ways and become wise. It has no leader, no official, no ruler, but it prepares its food in the summer. It gathers its food at the harvest." Now, when you think about it, ants are quite amazing little creatures. They're tiny, with small brains, but an ant's nest can contain anything from a few dozen ants up to several million, depending on the species. And the amazing thing about ants is they generally tend to work together for the common good. Now, even though ants in a colony can be distinguished into different castes of ants, like you've got the workers, you've got the soldiers, you've got the drones, you've got the queen, they don't have any explicit system of government where there's one ant telling the other ants what to do. The ants have a natural division of labour depending on their caste and their age and also experience, and they learn off each other and cooperate in making sure that all areas of the colony are functioning well. Many of the workers are involved in foraging, going out to find food, and then they bring it back into the nest. Now, friends, here, that small little creature called the ant puts many people in our society to shame. God wants each of us, as we grow up, to work for a living and not to sponge off other people. As the Apostle Paul puts it in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verses 11 and 12, Christians are to aspire to live quietly and to mind their own affairs and to work with their hands so that they may be able to walk properly in front of outsiders and not be dependent on anyone. The Bible tells us that as we grow up, we're not to be sponging off our parents or society. But depending on our stage of life and also depending on our role within the family, we need to make sure that we're pulling our weight, that we're providing for ourselves as much as we can, and also for our family, using the strengths and abilities that God has given to us in order to work for a living. So for any of us here who have been lazy, not studying if we're a student, or not helping out at home if we live with a family, and not going out to work if we're of working age, then God says to you, how long will you stay there lying down, O lazy bones? When will you get out of your bed? A few sleeps, a few slumbers, a little folding of the hands while lying down, and your poverty will come upon you like a bandit, and scarcity like an armed man. The danger of laziness is poverty. But a wise person will take the opportunities to work that God gives in order to start supporting ourselves rather than being a burden upon others. Now, it may not be the ideal job that you've just been offered, but if it's legitimate employment and you're out of work, then give it a go. You can get some work experience from that, as well as start making a bit of money in order to begin providing for yourself without being a burden on others. And even though it's true that some people can make a living by sponging off others, that way of acting is definitely not pleasing to God. The whole point of growing up is that we start to take responsibility for ourselves and our own livelihood. So don't make the dumb mistake of being lazy. Now, the third act of folly identified by Solomon is the problem of villainy. Now, villainy is wicked or criminal behaviour. And Solomon talks about this kind of folly in verses 12 through to 15. Basically, a villain is a troublemaker, someone who's basically good for nothing. And according to Solomon, these kind of people, they walk along with crooked mouths. They tell lies. They wink with their eyes. They scrape the ground with their feet in order to signal things. And they point with their fingers, plotting evil with perversity in their hearts. And they're always seeking to cause division and dissension. The folly that Solomon is talking about here is the stupidity of those who constantly make trouble for other people through evil actions that end up creating division. Are you someone who's always causing trouble for others? You know, there are some people out there who basically feel good by making others feel bad. But God doesn't like troublemakers. God wants us to be peacemakers, not to cause trouble for others. In the end, if you walk on the dark side and you refuse to give up that way of life, causing trouble for others, then Solomon tells us that God will smash you and there'll be no chance for healing. So, Solomon's advice in relation to this third act of folly is be nice instead of causing trouble for the world. Now, in the final four verses in our passage, Solomon goes on to list seven other kinds of folly. And these are all things that the Lord hates. These are things that God abhors. And the first five are linked in with a particular part of the human body. Solomon mentions the eyes, the tongue, the hands, the heart, and the feet. Now, the first of the follies of the body has to do with the eyes. Having haughty eyes, the kind of eyes that are always looking down on other people, is just plain stupid. It's a bad attitude to have. God wants us to be humble, not arrogant. He wants us to realize that in his sight, we're basically the same as everyone else. If not for the grace of God, then we'd be sinners just like everyone else. So be humble. Moving down from the eyes, we reach the tongue. We use our tongues to speak with, don't we? But God hates a tongue that doesn't speak the truth. God is a God of truth. And so therefore, we as his people should also value truth just as much as God does. So that means we need to stop telling lies. Question for us this morning is, how honest have we been lately? Moving down and out from the tongue, we come to the hands. Now, when you think about it, the human hand is an amazing piece of machinery. Our hands can be used for lots of things, from cutting down trees and smashing rocks with hammers to producing the most intricate artwork or embroidery. But the hand is also an agent of much destruction. We use our hands often as weapons to hurt other people, or we use our hands to carry weapons to destroy the lives of others. Unlawful killing, the shedding of innocent blood, is something that God totally abhors. For each drop of innocent blood spilt, the Bible actually pictures the earth where the blood spills. That piece of earth cries out to God in response to such gross acts of injustice. So don't get involved in the unlawful killing of others. You might be angry, but don't kill. Murder is a seriously stupid act of folly. Moving from the hands to the heart. The heart is viewed in the Bible as being the place within the human psyche where we think and feel. The centre of our human personality, according to the Bible, is our heart. And God wants our hearts to be filled with his word and thinking good thoughts. So a heart that devises evil schemes is a diseased heart. Instead of an evil heart of stone, God wants us to have living, beating hearts that ponder how we can love those people around us, not harm them. So having a good heart, rather than a heart that is thinking how to harm other people, is important. Moving now down to the ground, and we reach the feet that we use to move around with. God wants us to be active and energetic, but he wants our energy to be channeled into things that are good, not things that are evil. The problem with our feet is that all too often they're quick to run to what is wicked rather than to what is good. So we need to avoid the foot folly of having wickedly fast feet that are always running to do things which are wrong. Which brings us to the final two follies in our 10 follies this morning. These are found in verse 19. A false witness who breathes out lies, and a person who causes contention between brothers. As a witness in court, if you've ever been in court and been called to witness about a crime that has taken place or something that someone's done, obviously it's very important to tell the truth. Otherwise, miscarriage of justice can occur. So we're not to give false testimony in court, but this is not just limiting what we say to what is said in the courtroom when we swear on the Bible or something like that. This injunction against false testimony can also be applied to our speech about others in general. Do you tell the truth about other people, or do you go around spreading lies about them? To go around telling lies is to betray the character of the God who saved us. And as for our final act of folly, a folly of causing division, this also is a stupid thing to do. It's important for us to understand that our God is a God who loves unity. Whether it be unity between husband and wife, unity between the members of a family, unity between fellow members of a church, unity is something important to God. Unity is something that should be valued and protected. Whatever unit of society it may be, God wants to see his people working together for his glory and for the common good, just like the ants do. So the person who seeks to cause fights and divisions is ultimately opposing the will of God, and in the end, we'll have God to deal with. So all in all today, Solomon is telling us, don't be stupid. Don't be an idiot. Don't be foolish. Don't take on the debts of others. Don't be lazy. Don't be a villain. Don't be arrogant. Don't lie. Don't murder. Don't plan evil in your heart. Don't rush to do what's wicked. Don't lie about others, and don't cause division. The wise person seeks to avoid all such acts of folly.